Imagine a competition where the only rule is to keep walking at least 4 miles per hour without stopping until 99 of the 100 teenage contestants are dead. This is the chilling premise of The Long Walk, set in an alternate America ruled by a totalitarian government and the enigmatic Major. In this dystopian reality, slowing down earns you a warning, and after 3 warnings comes your ticket, execution by the armed soldiers monitoring the event. The prize for the last walker standing.
Anything they want for the rest of their life.
The story follows Ray Garrity, a 16-year-old from Maine, who inexplicably volunteers despite having witnessed the walk's horrors as a child. As the competition begins, Garrity forms connections with several others, including the cynical but likable Peter McRice, friendly Art Baker, and the mysterious Stebbins, who keeps to himself.
Their journey will test not just physical endurance, but the very limits of humanity itself.
The walk quickly becomes a brutal study in human deterioration. As miles accumulate, the boys face relentless challenges: rain, hills, sleep deprivation, and death's constant presence. Their bodies break down horrifically. Blisters form and burst. Muscles fail. Hallucinations set in. And some experience premature aging, their hair turning gray within days. Hant Olsen's transformation becomes emblematic. Initially cocky, he gradually descends into a zombie-like state, repeating, "I can't do it anymore," while his body continues mechanically. Others treat him as already dead. Sleep deprivation creates a surreal atmosphere where reality and hallucination blend. Garrity experiences walking sleep, continuing to move while his consciousness drifts through dreams. Most disturbing is how the walk strips away social conditioning. Bodily functions become public spectacles. Garrity endures the humiliation of defecating roadside while spectators photograph him. As civilization's veneer wears thin, primal emotions surface: rage, desperation, and the raw will to survive. What elevates this story beyond survival horror is its exploration of human connection under extreme duress. Despite knowing only one can survive, the boys form deep bonds that provide both comfort and complication. The relationship between Garrity and McFreeze evolves from casual acquaintance to something profound. McFreeze saves Garrity multiple times, most dramatically by restraining him from approaching his girlfriend in the crowd. His paradoxical explanation, "I like you, but I won't pick you up if you fall," captures their impossible situation. This contradiction, caring deeply for someone whose survival means your death, creates the emotional core. The boys develop a musketeer mentality, despite knowing their alliance must eventually break. Abraham's later No Help Pact marks the painful shift from camaraderie to competition. Even Barkovich, initially a one-dimensional villain, reveals vulnerability when he breaks down crying over his isolation. His plea, "I'm a good enough guy when you get to know me," humanizes him moments before his self-destruction. As the walk progresses through Maine, growing crowds transform individual suffering into mass spectacle. The novel examines humanity's fascination with witnessing pain, what McFreeze calls the death trip. This morbid attraction draws spectators from hundreds of miles away. The audience responds in various ways. Some cheer with banners and picnic baskets, others watch in hushed reverence. Children collect discarded items as souvenirs, treating the walk as a macabre scavenger hunt. Television crews thrust microphones at exhausted boys, eager to capture their suffering. The contrast between the walker's agony and the carnival-like atmosphere creates a devastating commentary on entertainment culture. This disparity becomes most evident during rest stops, where spectators feast while emaciated teenagers struggle with concentrated food tubes. Particularly poignant is Garrity's encounter with his mother and girlfriend Jan, a moment that crystallizes the cruel separation between participants and observers. Their intended intimate connection becomes yet another public spectacle, with Garrity barely touching their fingertips before being pulled away.
Perhaps the most puzzling aspect is why anyone would voluntarily join what amounts to a death march. When asked, Garrity admits, "I don't know," revealing both confusion and self-awareness. This fundamental question echoes throughout as the boys struggle to understand their own choices. Some offer practical reasons. Scram joined to provide for his pregnant wife. Others speak of the prize. Baker dreams of world travel, McVries of settling scores. But these rational motives crumble as miles accumulate, and the prize feels hollow against their suffering. As the walk progresses, Stebbins suggests, "We want to die, that's why we're here." This disturbing possibility gains credibility as they witness their fellows fall. Their continued participation, even as the horror becomes undeniable, supports this dark interpretation. The novel explores how societal pressures shape seemingly free choices. In this militaristic America, the walk represents masculine virtue, endurance, competition, and willingness to die for glory. Young men are conditioned to view participation as honorable rather than suicidal.
Hanging over the competition is the tantalizing prize, the promise that the winner can have anything he wants for life. This ultimate reward fuels initial enthusiasm, with boys dreaming of luxury cars, mansions, and world travel, while their spirits remain high. As deterioration sets in, blistered feet, exhausted muscles, sleep deprivation, they question whether any reward justifies their suffering. McFreeze asks what good unlimited wealth would be to someone broken by the experience. What's the prize worth when you can't even walk to the bathroom by yourself anymore? Maine's only previous winner, Reggie Cotter, died from a brain hemorrage months after winning, suggesting victory might be another form of defeat. When Stebbins reveals he's the major's illegitimate son seeking acknowledgement, it reframes what drives these boys. Not material gain, but deeper needs. Recognition, validation, identity, and connection in a society offering few legitimate paths to these. In the final scene, Garrity, as last walker, should feel triumphant. Instead, when the major approaches with his reward, Garrity walks past him, drawn toward a dark figure on the horizon. Whether hallucination, death personified, or his own doom remains ambiguous.
The novel's final chapter delivers a devastating conclusion without resolution. After witnessing the deaths of all 99 walkers, including those he came to care for deeply, Garrity achieves the hollow victory of being the last one standing. When Stebbins collapses, Garrity feels emptiness rather than triumph. As the major approaches with the prize, Garrity sees a dark figure down the road beckoning to him. In the final moments, Garrity ignores the major's hand and walks toward this figure. When touched again, he finds strength to run, continuing the walk even after winning, suggesting no true escape once the journey begins. Is Garrity hallucinating? Has he lost his sanity? Is he walking toward death? Or has the walk become so ingrained he cannot stop? Like life itself, the long walk offers no neat resolutions, only the imperative to keep moving forward, one step at a time, toward an uncertain destination. Perhaps the most terrifying realization is that we are all on our own long walk, moving inexorably forward until we can walk no more.